Another day. Another day, another class.
Sahana bhavatu, sahana bhunaktu, saha viryam karavavahai, tejasvina vadhitamastu ma vidvishavahai. Om shanti shanti shanti.
Let's chant 40, 41, and 42. We'll do that.
Tatvivekā vivikta syuh.
Kosha pranamano dhiyaha.
Kosha pranamano dhiyaha. Tehitatragunavastha
Vedamatratpritakritaha
Shushupya bhane bhanantu
Samadhavatmanunvayaha
Samadhavatmanumbayaha
Yatirekastvatmabhane
Sushuptyanavabhasanam
Yathamunjadishikaivam
Atma yukya samudritaha
Shariratritaya dhirayhi
Param brahmaiva jayate
Repeat it to me.
Tat vivekat.
Vivektaha.
Syuhu.
Koshaha.
Prana manodhyaha.
Tehi.
Tatra.
Guna avastha.
Guna avastha
Vedamatrat. I'll do that again. Guna avastha
Vedamatrat.
Pritakritaha. Okay. I'm going to spend just a little tiny bit more time on the Sanskrit of the verse for those of you that are studying Sanskrit, might be a little bit helpful. Spend a little 2 or 3 minutes on it. So, tat vivekat, fifth case. So, from the discrimination of that. So, from the viveka, from discriminating different, from the differentiation of that, then you have to know what the of that refers to. It's a pronoun of that. So from the commentary, which you don't have the Sanskrit commentary, okay, but at some point you all will have the Sanskrit commentary. then we'll be reading that. Okay. So anyway, tad viveka, from the discrimination of that, means of the linga sharira, of the sukshma, of the subtle body, of the sukshma sharira, the subtle body. So from the discrimination of the subtle body, viviktaha syuhu koshaha prana manodhyaha. These are all in 1-3 in the nominative plural. So if you say syuhu means they just are. Koshaha, so the koshas, and then it lists the koshas. Prana, mano, diaha. So that's the pranamaya kosha, the manomaya kosha, and then the buddhimaya kosha. Buddhi means vijnanamaya kosha. So these three koshas make up, if you recall, the pranamaya kosha, the manomaya kosha, and the vijnanamaya kosha, they make up the subtle body. So the sheath of prana, the sheath is made of the manas, and the sheath of the buddhi. So these three koshas, right, are what comprise the sukshma sharira, the subtle body. The subtle body, if you, it's just looking at the subtle body is made up of the sattva and rajas, elements of the sattva and rajas aspects of the subtle body. So that makes the subtle body, right, is the rajas and sattva aspects of the subtle elements. And so what are the sattva aspects? They're the buddhi, the buddhi, the manas, the types of antakarana vrittis that are there, and then the five sense organs. That's the sukshma. That's the sattva sukshma. And then what is the sattva rajas for the jiva, in the sukshma sharira? It's the five pranas and the five karmendriyas, organs of action. So you put all of these together, and if you just look at the antakarana having two aspects, the buddhi and the manas, you have 17 parts. So these 17 parts make up the sukshma sharira. And so here, when we're doing this viveka, this discrimination between the atma and the panchakoshas, Vidyaranya is doing it in reference to doing it by making a differentiation between the self and the three shariras. The causal body, which we haven't done yet, that'll be anandamaya kosha. But then this physical body, the stula sharira, so just pay attention now, because get this. The stula sharira, which means the physical body, right, which is the body with the sense organs that are utilized in the waking state. So he's using, Vidyaranya is using the waking state and then the subtle body, which is what? This is the annamaya kosha, the physical body. And then the subtle body is the pranamaya kosha, and then the manomaya kosha, and the buddhi, the vijnanamaya kosha. These three koshas make up the subtle body. And so now when we're doing a viveka, a discrimination between the self and these three koshas, we're actually doing a viveka, a discrimination between the self and the subtle body. And the subtle body is really represented in terms of the waking, dream, and deep sleep state by the dream. Because in the dream state, you're still awake, you have this duality that is still present, but there is no experience of this physical body. There's no experience of the annamaya kosha. And so in the dream state, then you look at, you know, what is the dream state? What is taking place in the dream state? It all comes from the sukshma sharira. And the sukshma of the subtle body is what? It's these three koshas, the pranamaya kosha, the manomaya kosha, and the vijnanamaya kosha. So what's the pranamaya kosha? It's the five pranas and the karmendriyas, the organs of action. What's the manomaya kosha? It's the sattva sense organs and the sattva antakarana, but the manas aspect of the antakarana. Okay. Then what's the vijnanamaya kosha? It's the buddhi. It's the sattva aspect of the five subtle elements, which make up the buddhi, and again, the five sense organs. Five sense organs are there in both. So you have these three koshas that are a way of dividing up the Sukshma Sharira. That's all. You're dividing up the subtle body in reference to the Sattva and Rajas Guna. That's how it's divided up. And then with this physical body, the Stula Sharira, physical body, is not divided up. It's just simply the Stula Sharira and the Annamaya Kosha, that covering that's made of food, is this physical body. So the Stula Sharira is just one thing. It's the Annamaya Kosha. It's a modification of food, basically. And it's called a kosha. Why? Because it causes me to take myself to be that. It's as though functions because of ajnanam as a covering of myself. And that's why we call it a kosha. And so when we're doing the waking, dream, deep sleep state differentiation, which using this anvaya vyatireka that Vidyaranya is using in his own way right now, where he's using, so we're doing a viveka between right now, and we'll do the anandamaya kosha and the karana sharira, the causal body, in a little bit. Right now, he's concerned with showing a discriminating myself from this physical body, the anandamaya kosha, the stula sharira, and now and he just did discriminate myself from the sukshma sharira, right, which is composed of the pranamaya, the manomaya, and the vijnanamaya koshas, these three koshas. They're differentiated because one is an expression of sattva, one is an expression of rajas. So you have to remember that the sukshma sharira is comprised of the sattva and rajas elements of the aspects of the five subtle elements, and this physical body is the tamas aspect of the five subtle elements that has become fivefold, that has gone through this process of panchikarana. So this is the all part of the model that they're using to differentiate very clearly, very thoroughly, my own being, the Atma, from the Maya Upadi. In doing that, you are first of all recognizing the Maya Upadi as being Ishwara and Jiva, right? So the Jiva is contained within Ishwara, and so that has been made clear. But then the jiva, which is contained in with Ishwara, how does that all manifest? How does that happen? So you have to look at how the unmanifest maya becomes, as it manifests, it becomes the five subtle elements, and those five subtle elements, the tamas aspect, goes through this panchikarana and becomes this physical world. So all the while, what is happening is the unmanifest me, the unmanifest jiva, right? And the unmanifest, which is part of the unmanifest Ishwara, come into manifestation with, in each case, the jiva being a part contained within Ishwara as a wave in the ocean. And so we say, from this causal perspective, you know, karana sharira, the causal body, we have names. We have names for the total samashti, the total causal body, the total karana sharira. Ishwara is karana, causal body. We call that him Ishwara. That's Ishwara, and the jiva within Ishwara becomes Prajna. So these are the names for that causal body. And then that manifests, it becomes the subtle body, which is just the subtle aspect of the five elements. And because Maya is Sattva, Rajas, and Tamas, that's what Maya is. It's not anything else. It's just comprised of these three gunas. When these three gunas, which we call Maya, manifest, then they manifest as the five subtle elements. And since their Maya is made of Sattva, Rajas, and Tamas, the five subtle elements are made of Sattva, Rajas, and Tamas. And so then we have to look at, okay, what is the Sattva aspect of the five subtle elements? What is the Rajas aspect? And what is the Tamas aspect? And so then when we divide it up like that, then we have the sattva aspect of the five subtle elements is divided into two, the manas and the buddhi. Right? We could divide more, but they're dividing into just the manomaya kosha and the vijnanamaya kosha. So that's the subtle aspect, right, of the sattva and of the rajas. And then what is the sattva aspect responsible for? What's responsible for your sense organs and for your mind? What is the rajas aspect responsible for? It's for your prana, the five pranas and your karmendriyas, your organs of action. And so all of these now are included in terms of the panchakoshas, right? So we have three koshas that make up the subtle body, right? The pranamaya, the manomaya, and the vijnanamaya. And one kosha, the annamaya, makes up this physical body. The only one we really have left is the anandamaya kosha, which we'll do after this verse, I think. So anyway, just to remind you of all of this. So what he says here is these koshas, now we're talking about the koshas, the three koshas that are included in the subtle body, which is the pranamaya, the manomaya, and the vijnanamaya. So here it says at the end of this first sentence, prana, mano, diaha. Diaha is vijnana. So these koshaha, 3-1, 1-3, these koshas, right, which are the prana, pranamaya kosha, manomaya kosha, and diaha, di is vijnanamaya kosha. Okay? So these three koshas, you know, are vivikdaha, are separated, tad vivekat, from the differentiating of them, of the linga sharira. Right? So these three koshas, which make up the linga, the subtle body, we are differentiating them. So how are we differentiating them? We're differentiating them, separating them from the self. How? Tat vivekat, from doing the discrimination, differentiation of them from what? From the self. So then he says, te hi tatra guna avasta beda matrat pratek kritaha. Pratek krita is just saying this differently. So these means this, these three koshas, they're separated. Why are they separated? These three koshas that are there in the linga sharira, in the sukshma sharira, in the subtle body. He said these are separated into the three states brought about by the difference in the gunas. Right? So if we look at the three koshas that are there included in the sukshma sharira, as I just went through, there's the manomaya and the vijnanamaya. Those are sattva, expressions of sattva. And then the pranamaya is an expression of rajas. And karmendriyas are an expression of rajas. So that's why we have this differentiation there. So these three koshas that are divided by guna, really, that are there, those three gunas have to be differentiated from the Atma. That's the idea here. So for you to see it in the prana. Oh, this one. This one is not bringing in the self yet. That'll come in the next one. I'm adding that because that's what needs to be done. But there's a discrimination in terms of the... All this is telling you, this verse is telling you, is that the sukshma sharira is made of these three koshas. And it's a differentiation in terms of guna. That's all. They make up, there's still the sukshma sharira, but you have the sattva aspect of the subtle elements and the rajas aspect of the subtle elements. And those are responsible for your antakarna, your mind, and your sense organs, and your organs for the prana, for the organs of action, and for the five pranas. And so why do we have koshas, and all these koshas contained in the subtle body? You know? Why is that? It's because all of those two koshas make up the subtle body, right? They're just differentiating by guna what is there to be found in the subtle body. And so if you look at it, we have three shariras, the physical body, the subtle body, and the causal body. But we have five koshas. So the question is, why do we have five koshas when we only have three shariras, when we only have three bodies, the causal, the subtle, and the physical, why then do you have five panchakoshas, five koshas? What's the logic there? Well, it's because in this physical body you only have one kosha, because the whole physical body is made of food. It's made of the five elements, tamas elements that have gone through panchikarana. So there's only one kosha here. But then, if you look at the subtle body, which indwells this physical body, there's not just one kosha, there are three koshas. So if you look at the pranamaya kosha, right, is differentiated from the manomaya kosha and the vijnanamaya kosha in terms of being rajas and the other two sattva. You know, so that's why you have five. So you have one for the body, three for the sukshma sharira, the pranamaya, manomaya, vijnanamaya, and then you have one left over, which is going to be for the karana sharira. It just refines the viveka, because in the end, you have to clearly recognize that your being can be differentiated, needs to be differentiated from all the experiences that are contained in the upadis. And you have to differentiate, the viveka has to be there between yourself and your body. The type 3 Upanishad goes through this in some depth. So I recognize a subject-object relationship between myself and my body. But then I can say, well, I could be, you know, the life force in the body. I could be the prana that enlivens the body, and when the prana goes, the body is dead. So I'm the prana. So the ahankara gets stuck there. No. We have to go through a whole viveka differentiation between myself and the prana. Now we're into the sukshma sharira, you know. Because the sukshma sharira is a big bag. It holds all of these different aspects, you know, of the subtle body. So I can identify with just the vital force, with the energy in my body that makes it live, you know, and gives it the karmendriyas, you know. A dead body doesn't have organs of action. It doesn't breathe. It doesn't have a circulatory system. So I need to get that subject-object relationship and recognize all of these things are known to me, you know, and I watch them change. Then, okay, now I'm identified with the pranamaya kosha. Well, that is not good enough, you know, because actually, what about my mind? Because I can say, the mind is aware of your prana and of your body. And so now I have to go into the manomaya kosha, you know, the vrittis. I have to understand, well, these vrittis and my mind, when it's focused on the prana, it becomes the self. So just moving inward. I can perceive the pranamaya kosha and the anamaya kosha, and I have a subject object relationship. So now I've moved in. Now I'm the manomaya kosha. Yeah, but the manomaya kosha is really perceived and acted upon by the vijnanamaya kosha, the buddhi, right? And so now again, we have a viveka. Yeah, but the problem here is that the buddhi itself is known. It also is objectified, so the vijnanamaya kosha is there. All we have left now, so now these things have been differentiated, that viveka, subject to object, knower, known differentiation, is established more in a more refined way than if I'm just using the physical body and the subtle body. Because the subtle body divides up into all types of what we call the ahankara, or it divides up into many different levels of upadis. Upadi. Okay. Upadi means it's a conditioning adjunct that I can identify with as myself. That's what makes it an upadi. If I say, I am this body functions as an upadi, a conditioning adjunct. It takes the ahankara. I am this. So this upadi word is important. So I can identify with the prana. I'm tired, or my digestion is totally screwed up, or you know, my breath isn't right. I'm identifying with these functions, you know. This is my breath. This is my digestive system, you know. You divide, this is my energy. So I identify myself with the prana. That identification has to, I need the viveka to free myself of that identification. And then the manomaya kosha, you know, the mind, after I free myself of that subject-object relationship, the jnana-maya kosha, free myself of that. And then now I'm still not done. There's one more. There's the karana sharira, causal body, that we call the anandamaya kosha. So that has to be done. So in this verse, what's happening in this verse is he's just explaining why all of these three koshas are contained in the subtle body. Because you've got five koshas and only three bodies. So if they're all lumped together, because they to collectively make up the subtle body, they're the elements that try and transmigrate. They take body after body, these 17 factors that we call the subtle body that are comprised of these three koshas, dividing them, the capacities that dividing them up according to guna, really, sattva and rajas, they transmigrate, you know. But we haven't even looked at the karana sharira yet, so that's the next one. Karana, causal body, it only gets one, anandamaya kosha. So the causal body is the anandamaya kosha. The anandamaya kosha is the causal body. Okay. So there's the five, three bodies, ananda, karana, sharira. These three, manomaya, the going backwards, the vijnanamaya kosha, the manomaya kosha, the pranamaya kosha, sukshma sharira, and then anamaya kosha, this physical body. All for viveka. All this delineation is so that I can differentiate myself from these things. That's the idea. So now he says, going into the next verse, he's noting in the little commentary that leads into the verse, he said, well, it's basically saying, you know, now the anandamaya kosha needs to be done. So we're going to do that now. That's what he said. Because he says, this the vivechana upaya. Upaya means the means, this viveka that we have to use, that we're using, now has to be done for the karma, for the causal body, you know, which is the anandamaya kosha. Okay, that's the introduction. So let's take a look at that one. Repeat after me. Shushupti.
Shushupti.
Abhane.
Abhane.
Bhanam tu.
Bhanam tu.
Bhanam tu.
Bhanam tu.
Samadhau.
Samadhau.
Atmanaha.
Atmanaha.
Anvayaha.
Anvayaha.
Vyatirekaha.
Vyatirekaha.
Tu.
Tu.
Atmabhane.
Atmabhane.
Shushupti.
Shushupti.
Anavabhasanam. So some of you are getting, I think that you're moving along in Sanskrit, so you probably, most of you, unless you're still working on the alphabet, you'll get that misunderstanding soon. These sandhi rules. So when I'm reading like that, I'm breaking the sandhi for you. And so if you already are studying and learning the sandhi rules, then it just helps you to recognize, oh, that's that sandhi rule that I learned. So that's why I'm bothering to do that. If you haven't learned the sandhi rules, then what I'm saying and what you're reading is going to be different. So with what I'm saying and what you're reading is different, you can know there is a sandhi rule there. And what it means is that in Sanskrit, when two letters come together, depending upon how that affects your vocal cords, your vocal system, your voice system, there will be a sandhi rule in order to match what you're actually saying, because one letter will affect another letter when you're running them together. And so in Sanskrit, they alter the letters to match what you say, because the letters affect each other, you know. Like, for instance, a lot of times you'll see a like tut, ending with a T, tut. And then you follow it by what we call a soft consonant. Like here, we're seeing this all over the place, like tut. And then a soft an aspirate consonant, like bonum. So if you just are talking along like a normal person and you want to say tut, bonum, you have to come to a full stop. If you're just talking normally, you'd say tut, bonum. Say the word tut. Tut. Now say bonum.
Bhanam.
Now say the two together, Tat Bhanam.
Tat Bhanam.
So do you see here the D? The Ba is changing that Tha into a Da. Tat Bhanam. Because of the force of the letter that comes after, usually, it will change. And so what do they do in Sanskrit? Since it's really an oral language, they just say, they make it be Tat Bhanam, not Tat Bhanam. Because that's what you say. So there's all kinds of rules. When they recognize how the words are changing when you speak it, then they have these rules. Sandhi means combining. When two letters combine, then they may, the sound that it makes may be affected, and so they'll give you the right sound. You know, so just so that you know. So when I'm reading these things and you see something different, like when I'm breaking it, I'm what we call breaking the sandhi and putting it back to its original form. Okay? So just keeping that in mind. Let's read this again. Shushupti.
Shushupti.
Abhane.
Abhane.
So see that ya? Shushuptya. Shushup, that's an E plus A. Say E and A fast. Ia.
Ia.
Ia. You're the ya? Shushupti abhanam. So shushuptya abhanam.
Shushupti
abhane. Shushupti abhane. I'm sorry, I thought I'm in abhane. Shushupti abhane. Now here's another one that you'll hear Sharada doing all the time. So when I'm breaking it, I don't do it. What you see there is Bhanam, right? Bhanam 2. See that? Bhanam 2. But if I am putting the sandhi in terms of pronunciation, that 2 will take the muk, ma sound to a na. Bhanam 2. Bhanam 2. So we just say Bhanam 2. Okay? So Bhanam 2 is going to, in pronunciation, is going to be Bhanam 2. And sometime will be written that way. Then here the next one. Samadhau.
Samadhau.
So that's from that Samadhav. You see that? Samadhav. Au changes to av. So Samadhau. Then Atmanaha. You see Atmano, it'll break and send it back, taking it back to its original, to Atmanaha. And then you see that S-looking curvy thing. Or for you, it would be like a, in transliteration, it would be a little like apostrophe. That is Anvayaha. Okay. So just get used to this. I'm not going to teach you Sandhi rules, but I just want you to know what's going on so that as you learn the Sandhi rules... For some of you haven't gotten there yet, then you don't. You can make use of this a little bit. You know, every time you see things combining differently, then you know, there's a sandhi rule. Okay. So, next line, I will do it again. Vyatirekaha.
Vyatirekaha.
Tu.
Tu.
Atmabhane.
Atmabhane.
Sushupti.
Sushupti.
Anavabhasanam.
Anavabhasanam.
So now we're getting into the Karana Sharira. He says, so the Karana Sharira, which is really the Annamaya Kosha, so he says, but doing it from the standpoint of the Sharira, because the Karana, the causal body, is the Annamaya Kosha. They're both the same. Okay? Just like the Annamaya Kosha, is the, what is it? Anandamaya Kosha. And this one, physical body is the Annamaya Kosha. The Anandamaya Kosha is the stula, the sukshma, the Karana Sharira. Okay. This will be over soon. Okay. This whole section is just a flurry of terms, you know, that you have to get them all in your head. And, yeah. I also get all screwed up when I'm trying to do it. So, here it says, so, Shushupti, deep sleep, abhane. When the deep sleep is not being experienced. Remember this word bhana means that the thing is presenting itself. So a good word to say here is like when there is abhana, no experience of the deep sleep. Shushupti abhane, when it's not shining. When the deep sleep state is not shining, bhanam too, but bhanam, there is shining, samadhau, in samadhi, atmanaha, of the self. So the in the way that Vidyaranya is doing this, is that what is the invariable that doesn't go away? So in the deep sleep state, you know, what happens is, in the deep sleep state, there is, when the deep sleep state is not there anymore, when you're awake from it, but he's going into samadhi, when there is no deep sleep being experienced, but in the samadhi, so in samadhi, when there is no deep sleep being experienced, then what? There is bhanam atmanaha. There is still the shining, the presence of the self, right? So what is that? That is what we call the anvaya. The anvaya means, you know, that which is the invariable, that which continues. Because the idea is this, each one of these states, waking, dream, deep sleep, samadhi, if we view samadhi as a state, they all negate each other. When the waking state is there, then the dream state is not. When the dream state is there, the waking state is gone. When the deep sleep state is there, both the dream state and the waking state are not being experienced. Right? In the samadhi state, that causal condition, the anandamaya kosha, is not being experienced. Okay? As a kosha, it's not being experienced. So, what is the anvaya? The anvaya is the self that is there in everyone. It doesn't get negated. So, there's what we call the invariable, you know. The invariable is the thing that doesn't change. The variables are the things that come and go. So it's just technical terms there. That's how Vidyaranya is using these two terms, anvaya, vyatireka, right? So the anvaya he's using as the invariable. The vyatireka means the things that drop off, right? And so what continually drops off in terms of the waking, dream, and deep sleep? These three states. They negate each other. When the one is, the other is not. So they are the variables that, as he will say, leave. They drop off. But the only thing remaining is the Atma. So the Atma yourself is the invariable. So this particular prakriya that differentiates yourself as the witness from the standpoint of these three states, that you can see clearly that you remain in all three states of experience. You remain in the deep sleep state, even though there's no commentator going on in that at that time, but you remain there because you have a memory of it. You have a memory of that state. To have a memory of it, you have to be there. Right? But since there's nobody commentating on it in the deep sleep state, you don't know anything from the standpoint of the sharira, and Atma, yourself, is not a knower. Atma's not a knower, so it's never commenting on anything. It's as you simply are. The knownness has to do with the awake upadhi, or the mind that is awake. When the mind is in causal condition, then there's nothing known, there is no knower, no relationship there to comment on that. But when you wake up again, then that causal condition is known, right? That means you have to be there, you know? Otherwise it can't be known. And so, when we do this, to me, I remember when Swamiji was doing this, and it was new at the beginning, I was very new to it. It had such a huge impact on me. Because what can you say, really? I mean, just look at the situation. You can't deny that you are there in each state. You can have trouble with the deep sleep, because then we have to understand that in terms of memory. But say if you just look at waking and dream. The one who is the waker is the one who is the dreamer. That's given. It's my waking state. It's my dream. So I am there. But the worldly experience is different. The waking world is different from the dream world. And the one you're identified with in the waking world is different than the one you're identified. It means all the upadis, the body, mind, sense organs, in each one, you take on a different body. Totally. But you're not different. You have, nothing has happened. You're the invariable. You're the one who is the self of the of the waking state as Virat, actually, and you're the self of the one, of the jiva, the one that you're, the jiva upadhi that you're identified with in the waking state. You're the self of that. And you're the self of the dream state, and you're the self of the one you may be identified with in the dream state. But those two negate each other, and the deep sleep state even gets rid of the knower. Right? But yet, you remain. There's no hesitancy for you to say, yo, I had a most interesting dream last night, and I took on this kind of form, and we're doing this and that, you know? But your body didn't take on this form. Not at all. The world is totally different, you know? The different time, different place. So, but I think it's so funny that we don't have a problem with that. Nobody even thinks that we don't have a problem with that. We never think about it because there is absolutely no problem because nothing happens to me. And so we don't put this logic together, this anvayavyatireka logic. We don't even think about it because we totally take it for granted, you know. But actually, it's a very powerful prakriya because it proves that you do not require these experiences. Your being, who you are, this me, the one you identify with as you, does not require the waking state or the waking body experience to feel identified with that. Right? You don't require that to be you, to be myself. It doesn't add to you, it doesn't take away from you. It's the same with the dream. It doesn't add to you, it doesn't take away from you. Same with a deep sleep state where there's no nourishment, there's nothing, you love that state. Finally, just block out everything, everything, all the upadis, the whole world. Ah, yeah. So, we look forward to it, you know. And it negates all experience, really. It's just a jnanam which is illumined by consciousness. It's called the prajna. Okay. So, how can that be? That's why it's a powerful prakriya. You start in this teaching methodology, you start out really by often. There's different ways of unfolding this. One of the easiest way for a student to understand is maybe to start out with this panchakosha viveka, where you do the drishya viveka. You know, you start out by making the student recognize, you know, that I am the subject, this person here is the subject, and all of this is the object. Subject, object. That's obvious. We don't have to teach it. The only reason we teach it is so that you can realize how obvious it is, that there is a subject-object relationship there. That's very important. You know? But then you move inward, and then you realize by the same five sense organs that are aware of this world, those same five sense organs are aware of this body. Without the five sense organs, you know, focused on this body, you wouldn't have a body. And to your knowledge, there would be no experience of the body. Right? So that's a viveka. So that viveka, going inward, you know, until you've eliminated all of the things that can be objectified, all of the upadis, you go one by one, they all become objectified. They all belong to the world, to Ishwara, actually. And you're left with yourself. Right? So this is often called, in the different ways we do it, this first, the most overarching term that we use is drik drishya viveka. That's a viveka, a discrimination between the knower, the drik, and the drishya, the seen, that which can be objectified between the subject and the object, the knower and the known. That's a prakriya, drik drishya viveka. Panchakosha viveka is another way of saying drik drishya viveka, but now we're doing it in reference to differentiating myself from the experiences of each kosha, you know, from the anamaya kosha all the way through to the anandamaya kosha. There's a viveka that has to take place so that these actually become, they're no longer really functioning as koshas because they're not, I don't identify with them as myself. So the panchakosha viveka allows me, myself, to be free from these five koshas. So that's a prakriya. So we've got drik drishya viveka, panchakosha viveka. And then we had the one we're just working on, which is called Avastha Traya Sakshi. A word Avastha technically means just a state of experience. Avastha Traya, a group of three, the group of three states of experience, which are what? Waking, dream, deep sleep. So this group of three states of experience, showing that I am the Sakshi of them, I'm not contained in any one of them. I'm the Sakshi, the witness of all three, from their standpoint. From my standpoint, I'm just awareness. This is so, Avastha Traya Sakshi, this is a prakriya. It's a teaching methodology that we use. So here's three of them, which he's just given. Three always used teaching methodologies to help you differentiate and recognize the self that is left over after I've negated all of the objects. Then who am I? Free of all of these things. So this has to take place. And to understand, like, well, there's more prakriyas, but these are the three we're dealing with right now. What you have to understand, you know, as well, this is the difference between saying that Vedanta is a pramana, that the Vedanta is actually a means of knowledge. Right? You have to say that. It's a means of knowledge, as opposed to being a philosophical system. If you say, then you have to memorize all this and try to understand it, and then this philosophical system, you go meditate and try to realize the truth of what they're trying to say. You know? You meditate and try to understand it. That's when Vedanta's not being understood as a pramana. Traditional Advaita Vedanta is a pramana. The Upanishads are a pramana. What does that mean is that these prakriyas, these teaching methodologies actually take your mind step by step to having this aparoksha, this immediate recognition of you, the me, differentiated from these different levels of experience that we call the koshas, or we call the shariras, or we call the three states of the three avastas, the three states of experience. In every single one, there is a viveka, differentiating me from the experience. You get it? Good. It's very beautiful, really. So here, again, to go back, just to sum up this verse 41. So when the deep sleep is not shining in samadhi, because he's using the samadhi avastha, which we don't usually use, but he is using it. So if you're in samadhi, there's no ajnanam there. You're just being with yourself, the atma. Okay. So in when the deep sleep avastha is not being experienced in samadhi, then what? Then but at that time, yourself is shining. That means yourself now is still the anvaya. It's the one, it's the invariable that is there in every state of experience. And so then it says, vyatirekaha tu atmabhane, but the vyatireka, the thing that drops off when the self is shining, atmabhane, when the self is shining, is the shishupti, which anavabhasana, anavabhasana. It's not shining. The shishupti is not being experienced. It's dropped off. Because in samadhi, there is no deep sleep that you experience, and so that becomes the vyatireka. That's what's dropping off. Okay, that's the variable. So all of these states, the panchakoshas, the five koshas, the three shariras, the karana, sukshma, and stula shariras, these three bodies, these five koshas, these three bodies, these three states of experience, waking, dream, and deep sleep. All of the states of experience, except, you know, the bodies, the koshas, and the states of experience, all of them are vyatireka. They all fall off upon analysis. The one state replaces the other. The one kosha replaces the other. And what remains as the non-unvariable in all of these analyses is the atma. And so the atma is the anvaya. Every other thing is the vyatireka. Vyatireka means it gets left behind. So now when all of these things get left behind, then there you are, without any koshas, just you. And so then what has to happen, which we'll be moving into, is then who am I? Well, yeah, but what am I now? So now we have to talk about, we'll have to move into this invariable, this me that is left. You know, like Krishnamurti would do a lot of this negation. He was considered a master of neti-neti, of negation. But the problem he had, if you want to call it, he didn't have a problem, I'm sure, but the problem he had in terms of wielding the knowledge in the way that he did, he would never give the positive assertion. And so even though, so what the students happened to the students is everything got taken away, but there was no positive assertion toward focusing the mind on what is left. That didn't happen. And so students would be just left with, okay, none of this is real. But who am I in all of this? That's why there's the negation, neti, neti, not this, not this, not this, not this, that has to be recognized, but who am I also has to be addressed. That's the positive assertion. We have to do all of this down. See, but I just want you to keep pulling this all back together for you so you kind of understand the whole process and why we're doing all of this. You need to see where how it fits in the puzzle. So, all of this. Set your job now.